That's right. Good afternoon, everybody. Hey, I'm Ann Eller, and I have Tony Davis, Sheriff Tony Davis, in the building with us this afternoon. I understand you celebrated a birthday yesterday. Happy birthday.
Well, I appreciate that. And this morning, it was very nice. Yesterday, I had hot dogs for lunch, and I had hot dogs for dinner. But today, this morning, I received a phone call that really perked me up. It really, really brought a smile to my face. It was a lady calling me and singing happy birthday, singing telegram. And she's an elderly lady that's probably in her 80s. She's had some strokes, and she's not able to get out and about as she used to. But she thought enough of me to call and like I said, sing happy birthday to me over the telephone. So I brought a smile to my face and perked me up some.
So how young are you now?
Don't ask that question. Let's put it this way. I was born in 1948, so you can figure that one out.
All right. That's a good way to put it. So you've been a sheriff for two terms.
I'll be completing my second term as sheriff, yes.
Right. And was it hard to make a decision to do a third term?
No, Ann, because I still have a lot of energy. My health is good. I got good people working for me, and I care about the issues in Greenwood County. I care enough to continue to fight this battle.
Do you think we're going to get into what some of the issues are. What do you feel is the single biggest issue that still is grabbing you?
Grabbing me or grabbing the community?
The community.
I personally think that the drug problem is a contributor to most of the crime we have in Greenwood County, especially most of the thefts, most of your burglaries, most of your robberies, many of your assaults and things like that. But I think it's the drug problem, and we're going to continue to fight this drug problem the best that I can.
Well, I can remember talking to you when you first were elected, and that was one of the things that you wanted to and we wanted to try to. If I remember correctly, I'm doing this from memory, that stopping them at the county line was what we hoped to be able to do. And obviously, they're still getting into Greenwood County.
But at the same time, huge amounts are getting into this country. And once it comes across our borders, and it probably goes 500 different directions. I would tell you that Greenwood is not a hub for drugs. However, from what I understand and information I have received and reports I have read, Atlanta, Georgia is. And Atlanta's about 3 hours away from us. Never would I be so naive to say that people don't come to Greenwood and get some of their drugs, but I don't think they're coming to Greenwood and getting any large quantities at all. But we do have people that leave our county and go to other counties and go to other areas, get quantities of drugs, and bring them back into Greenwood.
Wow.
And distribute them on our streets. And, you know, when somebody decides or makes a choice to use drugs, sure, I'd love to get in their head and say, hey, please, like Nancy Reagan said, just say no. People don't do that. So you ask, why are you using drugs? There's a thousand different reasons as to why somebody chooses to use it. Most of the time it's some type of depression, or they having a bad time in their life and they think this is going to pick them up. All this is doing is doubling that bad time and tripling that bad time.
What's the biggest drug that we have a problem with?
Well, I think right now we've got a problem with three. You know, back in the 70s when I first started in marijuana, I thought marijuana was the worst drug out on the streets.
And then, now it's almost legal.
Almost. I hope it never gets that way, but it's a possibility. And then along came, in the 80s, along came cocaine. Well, marijuana didn't go away. Also in the later 80s, we had the crack epidemic. Well, cocaine and marijuana didn't go away. And then on into the 90s, that epidemic stayed with us for quite a while. And then on into the later 90s, we had the methamphetamine. Some call it crystal meth, some call it ice. It started coming in and taking over, but still, crack, cocaine, marijuana didn't go away. It's still out there. Well, we still have this methamphetamine problem out here, and right now that's probably the biggest drug or the biggest illegal drug that's being abused. But I don't want anybody to forget prescription pills. Many of these prescription pills are legal, but they are being sold illegally and being used illegally. That's a major problem we have on the streets, too. Also, heroin is making a comeback. In the last couple of days, we searched two locations and got heroin from both places. So that's making a comeback. And they're also mixing this, cutting this heroin with something called fentanyl or something like that, which is another very dangerous drug, which is causing overdoses throughout this country. People are overdosing and dying on it. Recently in the city, on Milwee Street, we had an overdose. So it's the drug problem is a major issue. But, you know, when you say drugs, y'all got to say, also have to say alcohol. It's a drug, too. And we do have some alcohol abuse. I got about 190, I think this morning had 196 individuals in custody. And a lot of those are also not only illegal drug problems, but also alcohol problems.
Do you think that there should be a difference between those that we lock up and give sentences and those that need help? I mean, there's this big push right now for possibly taking people and putting them into programs and trying to get them straight and keeping them away from this. Do you think that that is a possibility?
I think it's a good possibility, Ann, but you can talk to many people that has been to rehab. Rehab only works if you want it to work. You know, the ones who are actually putting the drugs out on the streets or putting this poison out on the streets are the ones, in my opinion, should be locked up and put away. The ones who are addicted to it, like I said, unless they want help, you can send them to five or six rehabs, and you know, it's not going to do any good until Solicitor Jones, the old Solicitor Jones said one time, a person is not going to get off of drugs until he hits the bottom of the barrel. And a lot of them has to do that before they decide to make that choice.
That's the same thing with alcoholics. Alcoholics Anonymous, they say. But we're taking up a lot of room in the jails.
Right.
Right way to go? Only way to go? What do you think?
Well, you know, sometimes, you know, when you make a charge, sure, you make an arrest on it, but that person can be released once bond is set. Mm-hmm. Once bond is set, people say, why so many people in jail? Well, a lot of them are there because they haven't made bond yet. You know, when they make bond, they can get back out on the streets. But yeah, you're right. It costs us about $40 and $45 a day to house an inmate. And I have spoken with the judges, and especially, and they have been cooperating with me a lot, but when we get these folks that are charged with nonviolent crimes. For example, shoplifting. Now, shoplifting is stealing. But when you get somebody charged with a shoplifting, give them a court date, put them back out on the streets. You know, a malicious injury, a public drunk. A lot of times you arrest a public drunk for his own safety or his or her own safety because they walking down the street and they're staggering all over the road, all over the street. And next thing you know, they stepped out in front of a car. So you got to get them off the street. You take them home and say, hey, stay home. They're not going to do it. 5 minutes after you're gone, they're right back out on the street causing more problems. So you have to get them in there and get them sobered up. At least the judges will pretty much let them go the next day after they sobered up.
What, in your position, do you think can be done more than what's being done now? And I presume that might lead to a future what you plan to do with the drug issue being the root of, shall we say, of what's going on with the problems. What can you see doing through the sheriff's office?
And sure, we'd love for, first of all, I'd love for there not to be any illegal drugs, and I'd love for nobody to ever sell them, and I'd love for nobody to ever use them. But, you know, as long as we got people putting this poison out on the street, we're going to continue to fight this problem the best that we can and try to get as much of the drugs off the street as we can. However, are we going to arrest everybody? Probably not. Like I said, it's an issue that contributes to other crimes.
Well, is there a potential plan on what the next step? Because, I mean, if you read the Index Journal and Greenwood Today, I mean, it looks like everybody's been arrested. I mean, how many more people can be out there doing drugs? It seems on a regular basis you're seeing at least 4 or 5 people, shall we say, a day when you guys go in and do a big sweep. Yes, mm-hmm. Then there's a whole lot. But is there any plan to futuristically do something more? Are we ever going to get ahead of it, or is this just the life that we have to live with now?
Unfortunately, I think it's the life we have to live with. I think every community in our country is experiencing much of the same problem. If it's sort of like I used to tell parents years ago, if I could write a book and solve these issues concerning their kids, especially truant or troublemaking juveniles, I'd be wealthy, because there's so many people out here having problems with their children. Just like so many families are having problems with family members being on drugs. I wish I knew the answer. Although I've been doing this since 1975, I do not know that answer. I wish I did. If I did, I'd clean these streets immediately.
So putting more people on it, larger staff, training, better training maybe for the sheriff's deputies. I mean, are there any things that you think that can be done?
Well, you know, one thing that Chief Brooks and I did once I got elected is we combined our drug unit. That gives us, each one of us, it gives us more manpower. What was happening was the city had a drug unit, and the county had a drug unit, and the county may be working on one particular street, and the city's working on maybe someone else on that same street, and information is not being shared. Now they work together, which gives us both more manpower and gives us gives both agencies more investigations and more seizures and getting more drugs off the street. Ask me that question again. I think I probably got off the course there a
little
bit.
Well, with more officers, is there more training? Are there anything internally that can be done? Or is it just it's hopeless to try to come up with a plan to change the focus? I guess that's what I was trying to ask you.
I think that I think we have a total of, I have to go back and count right off the top of my head. I think we got 7 officers that are dedicated to nothing but the drug problem. Uniform patrol investigations also work some of the drug issues also. Uniform patrol, when they're out here, it seems like many cars they stop out here on the streets, whether it's day or night, reek of marijuana. And so that leads also to getting some of the drugs off the streets. Like I said, I wish I knew that answer. Put more manpower to it. If I had the manpower, I could. In order to get more manpower, that means taxes are going to be raised, and the citizens don't like paying taxes, and so that means I'm stuck with pretty much what I have.
Okay. I was just hopeful that maybe there was a new plan coming down the pike.
You know, there's laws out there that we enforce. There's investigative techniques that we use, but, you know, it's sort of like I tell some of the guys when they work in some of these concerts where they have 500 or 600 people, and we got 4 or 5 officers out there. Guys, you're outnumbered. And I think that we are outnumbered out here on the streets with the number of people that wants to use drugs, the number of people that are using drugs, and the number of people that are selling the drugs. I think our guys do an outstanding job. They work hard. They don't watch a clock. They in early. They stay late. They come back out at night. Not only do they work drugs, but they also work the clubs. We also deal with prostitution and gambling. So we have a whole gamut of things that we have to work in. Someone was complaining the other day about the sheriff's office was not at a traffic scene directing traffic, was not at a wreck directing traffic. And he was complaining about that. I said, you know, he's complaining about what we didn't do. Does he know what all we do? And I'm sure he don't have a clue. But we attack this problem the best that we can with the resources that we have. And we also cooperate fully with the ATF, Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and also with the DEA, Drug Enforcement Administration. You know, they have limited manpower also, but we still cooperate with them, and they cooperate with us best they can.
Okay, I know you can't really talk about a couple of these issues, but one that is directly related to the drugs is the issue with the Strickland and some of the things coming down the pike there. These were very big. They were very big in the paper. They were very big and concerned to the citizens of Greenwood County. Is there anything that you can speak to as far as is the potential, and I think this may be the better question, is there a potential of this type of thing happening under your watch?
Well, it did happen. And when I found out about it, when I discovered what was perceived as wrongdoing, I contacted we did a little internal investigation. I contacted the State Law Enforcement Division and turned the investigation over to them and gave them everything that they requested. So right now, as far as I know, it has been turned over to the Attorney General's office.
But do you think, I guess my just to my question is, do you feel that, was there any culpability on your part? Is this, have you made changes within the department to make sure that something like this doesn't happen again?
Yes, changes have been made. And some of the changes we made previous to this is how we found this particular situation out. But more safeguards have been put in place as far as checking, double checking, rechecking, signing off, and so forth. So I don't foresee that problem happening again. I would tell you that we did have debit cards. Certain officers had debit cards, and the reason we had debit cards was in case we had an issue come up at night. I didn't allow them to have a whole bunch of money, but to make a large amount, large drug purchase, and if they were out here working and had an opportunity to purchase a large quantity, then they had access to the money. Once I saw that, and it wasn't, honestly, it was not a large amount of money. Once I saw that the money that was being spent did not correspond to the amount of drugs that was being purchased or the amount of payment to a confidential informant, I got to looking at it a little harder, and it just didn't quite jive to me, so that's when I called for the investigation.
How did it make you feel?
It hurts because you believe in people, and I got roughly 150 employees, and you put people in positions because you trust them, you've got confidence in them, you know what their ability is, and if someone decides to betray you, you don't know it, but when you find it out, you got to do everything you can to correct it, and that's what I did.
Okay, understand, and I had to be, you've been through so many things. The 2013, the amount of homicides, and you and I talked about the family mm-hmm. and what a horrific sight that was, and to deal with all that.
It never goes away. Once you see a scene like that, naturally your heart goes out to them. But the image is always in the back of your mind. And also the other homicides I've seen, the other suicides I've seen, it doesn't leave you. It's always back there. You know, you're laying there in bed at night trying to go to sleep, and, you know, one will surface. And, you know, you've got to try to push it back. But it's tough. You hear a lot of these guys coming back from overseas with PTSD. You know, a lot of police officers see a lot of the things, sometimes a lot of the same things that those guys going over there. And I'm pro-military through and through. I really am. But, you know, police officers, EMTs, even hospital workers and doctors, they see a lot of horrific stuff.
Yeah, and we don't always take that into account, do we?
We don't. No, we don't. A lot of times it's hard to deal with, and you never forget it. It stays with you forever. Like I said, you try to repress it and go on about your daily life and move on to this and move on to that, but too many times it resurfaces.
Do you think there should be more effort made towards helping police officers, even hospital workers, like you're saying? Should there be a place where they can go and really unload and not be taking their job away from them? I mean, because I think, isn't that a double-edged sword right there
for
them?
It is. You know, you don't want to get labeled as that particular type person. You know, all of us police officers, we're so macho, we have such egos, you know. You don't want to be labeled as that person that actually breaks down and cries. But I would tell you, there have been times that I have broken down and cried. I've had tears. I was giving a talk the other night to a group of veterans, and the subject of the incident down on the Callison Highway come up, and my eyes watered up, you know, because, like I said, I was down there. I saw, and I even knew the individual that committed that horrific act, and I even saw the video on the school bus where the kids were coming home happy, joyful, laughing, playing, had no idea what they were going to face when they got off of that school bus. And I'm telling you, that breaks my heart. It really does. But I guess too many times I think with my heart instead of my head, when most of the time I should probably use my head, but it's probably not the smartest head in the world. But I think oftentimes with my heart, I take people's feelings into consideration. You know, you got to show compassion, you got to care. And people ask me why I'm running for sheriff again, and that's why, because I care.
thought never crossed your mind to give it up because you care too much? Do you think you care too much? Do you think that, I mean, serious, you know, it's a, I think that's a hard, it's a hard job to be in that position.
It's a, you know, it's a lot of responsibility that, that falls upon your shoulders, even from the detention center to your 911, to your school resource officers, to your investigators, to your narcotics officers, to your uniform patrol, to your civil process. It's a lot of responsibility, but, you know, when you got good people, very good and committed people that that work for you, it makes your job a lot easier. Sure, the responsibility is still on my shoulders, but I do have to put my trust and my confidence into them.
Well, I think it's admirable that that you are running again and that you continue fighting, what shall we say, fighting the good fight?
We're going to fight this good fight. And, you know, I'd love to say at the end of the day we won, but when people choose to do a certain thing or if they choose to commit a crime, it's sort of like a house. And if a person is intent on breaking into your house, I don't care if you put up a concrete wall, a brick wall all the way around your house. If he really wants to get in, they're going to get in. So I would say deter it the best that you can, but at the same time, make sure you got all your belongings, ID, photographed, serial numbers, everything.
The Boy Scout motto, be prepared.
Be prepared, yes. Unfortunately, I would tell you this, that right now, we're working on some things, and sort of like it's looking for a needle in a haystack. We're having utility trailers and golf carts stolen. And they're in, you know, no pattern to it. They're in different parts of the county. We're going to catch these people. Mm-hmm. If I'm going to catch them or die, one of the two. We're going to catch these folks. You know, it's one lady's 89 years old. She has a golf cart parked under her carport, had a golf cart parked under her carport. The only time she uses it is when she goes to the mailbox to get her mail or get her paper. And she brings it back and parks it. Not only did they steal a golf cart, they stole a darn battery charger to go with it. So that breaks my heart. It does, because that lady did not deserve that. Well, actually, nobody deserves any items to be stolen from them. But that's what these folks that are addicted to drugs are doing. That's how they're supporting their habits. So we just arrested a gentleman. I won't say a gentleman. In my opinion, he's a serial thief. And now we got warrants on him out of Georgia. We're getting warrants on him. We're not, but McCormick County's getting warrants out of him out of McCormick. And we caught him with the stuff here in Greenwood and called McCormick and Georgia, and they were able to identify their stuff. So now they're going to charge him. And this individual just got out of jail about 2 months ago for doing the same thing.
That's what's hard to believe.
It really is. You know, they go back to the same thing over and over and over again. It's a revolving door system. But here's one thing that gets me. Person gets arrested today. He gets out of jail tomorrow. And his case is a felony, a General Sessions court case. Right. He has 90 days before he ever has to set foot in a courthouse. Then he goes up there and after his 90 days, and they tell him what his official charges are, and they ask him, does he have an attorney? And they ask him if he's going to plead guilty or not guilty. And then they'll give him another court date, which he'll pretty much give him a second appearance. So these individuals that, you know, have no desire to work or have a job or be productive in society, they get out of jail today. What are they going to do for the next 90 days? And then what are they going to do for the 90 days after that along? I've got one gentleman in my jail's been there for almost 4 years.
Wow.
His case is not, but it's a very violent case. Another thing that gets me is we had a drug dealer not too long ago. He spent about, I'm going to say 30 days or so in our jail. When he got out of jail, they put him on an ankle monitor. Do you know when he got sentenced, the time that he was on that ankle monitor, which was about 6 months, mm-hmm. is going to count as part of his jail sentence? That's going to count as jail time, plus the 30 days he did in our jail. That's also going to count. So let's just say that he got 5 years. If it's not an 85% sentence, he's going to do about roughly half of that. And then now you're going to take the 6 months that he wore the ankle monitor. You're going to take that off. And now you're going to take the 30 days that he spent in the jail in our holding facility waiting to go to court before he got out of a bond. You're going to take that off. So now he's down to a little over a year that he's going to serve. So,
wow.
So where's the deterrent in the system? The deterrent is not there.
Wow. Hey, we're here with Sheriff Tony Davis. I think we're having a very interesting conversation this afternoon. If you've got a question, give us a call, 229-7984. We'll be right back. Don't you go away.
Gold. Gold. More precious than any other time in history. Do you have gold? Do you need cash? Then bring it to SFG. That's Sharp Facets Gallery, 1220 Bypass 72, Greenwood. Telephone 229-6613. Don't forget, we buy diamonds too. Paying the highest prices for your gold and diamonds at Sharp Facets Gallery.
Oh, that's right. We're right back here. We are with here with Sheriff Tony Davis. You know, as you look back over the 8 years that, well, it will be 8 years that you've been in office and you want to go forth in it, what do you think are your strongest characteristics that are good for the sheriff's office? I mean, you know, you have to know what makes a good sheriff, I would think, and you've not only analyzed yourself, but probably other sheriffs out there.
You know, Ann, I hope that I am the leader that the guys at the Sheriff's Department want and deserve. I also think knowledge, people skills, experience, and a commitment to the employees, to the officers, to the detention officers, to the 911 operators, and to the people of the county. I hope I have those attributes.
Well, you've definitely been working on them, right?
I've worked on them, yeah.
Yeah, for 8 years here now. We're coming up on 8 years, yeah. So some of the new things that you have instituted, the Citizens Academy.
Right, right.
How has that worked? I had thought I might get in on that, but then I'm just got too much going on.
I don't know. We do it at one night a week. It lasts for 6 weeks. We do it at one night a week from 6:30 to 8:30. You know, the Citizens Academy is something that, you know, I thought long and hard about, and we did some research on it, and we come up with a program. Our first class, we had 13 people in the class from all over Greenwood County, and there were some professional folks, some retired. And we told them in a sense, hey, y'all gonna be the guinea pigs. This is our first. And we tell them we're going to ask you to critique us after the 6 weeks. And I got to say that they gave us high marks, because I asked them, what is it that you want to see more of? What is it you want to see less of? What is it we should add, or what is it we should delete? All of them gave a glowing recommendation. I mean, they really liked it. I got to sort of bridging the gap. In a sense, it gives us an opportunity to show the community what their law enforcement agency does. Mm-hmm. You know, we go so far as to, they meet a lot of the officers at the Sheriff's Department. We give them a tour of the jail. We give them a tour of the 911 center. We bring a patrol car in there and show them all the equipment that we have in the patrol car. We bring the narcotics officers in. We bring the investigators in. We bring the school resource officers in. We show them how a dog team works. So the impression I got from them telling me is they really enjoyed it. And well, a couple of them said, hey, we'd like to go back through it. You know, I said, hey, come on, you know, because, you know, if we can get this word out in the community and we can show folks what we do and why we do and how we do and why we do some of the things that we do, I think word was spread in the community that, you know, we are, the people of Greenwood County's law enforcement, and, we want them to know that we're not the bad guys. You know, we're the guys that you're going to call for help, and we're going to come out there and try to help you as much as we possibly can. I'm very high on the way people are being treated. I always want to treat people not only with courtesy, but with dignity and respect. I give a young man an example this morning. That 80-year-old lady who's had her mailbox knocked over, that is the biggest crisis in her life at that time. She's not thinking about all our soldiers being killed in Afghanistan, or been fighting a war in Afghanistan, or the shootings in Chicago, or what's happening in this part of the county. What she's concerned about mailbox, and that is a crisis to her. I said, you know, when we go out there to answer that call, let's do everything we can to show her that we care. Let's do everything we can to make her feel a little bit better about the situation than she did when we got there. And so that's what I try to instill in our folks, is the way to treat people. Always treat people like you'd want to be treated, as long as they'll let you. Not everybody's going to let you treat them that way. Like I tell them, I don't want you to stand up there and let some person spit in your face, slap you in the face, knock you down or whatever. Protect yourself. But at
the
same time,
what do you think about the cameras, Tony? What do you think about cameras, body cameras? Isn't this something that is coming? Do you already have a low level, or you're going to have better cameras?
We're going to have better cameras. We've already submitted our application. You know, the state passed that law, and it says that we don't have to have them until they fund it. We have already submitted our application. I think it's $120,000, I believe, is what it was. You know,
You think the body cameras are a good thing for the officers?
Certainly. I certainly do. And just give you an example. We have cameras in our vehicles. We had a lady come up yesterday with her daughter that wanted to complain that the drugs found in the car was not hers.
Okay.
We showed her the video of exactly what happened, where she put the drugs when the officer stopped her, and so forth. And the lady changed her mind. So the cameras can make us or break us, but I think more than anything, it's going to make us. It's going to save us now. You know, when the officer's doing the right thing, it's going to show that. If he's doing the wrong thing, it's going to show it, and we're going to review those regularly. It also helps in the credibility of the evidence. It also helps in the conversation that we're having with someone. Now, I think also that body cameras are going to have to be a common sense thing. You know, number one, they're not going to be FOI-able, which I think is good, because when you got a body camera on and you're inside of a residence and you've got children running around, and you know, a lot of times people in their residence are not fully dressed, especially a child, are running around in his diaper. Public don't need to see that child, you know, and when you've got this man and this woman fussing and arguing, like I said, sometimes they're in various modes of dress, I guess we could say. Alcohol is usually involved in a lot of it, finances or drugs. You know, those are things that it's not going to be FOI-able. Also, if you go into let's say you have a sexual assault victim and you're interviewing that sexual assault victim, that's not going to be FOI-able. You're going to have to tell the person that, I've got my body camera on. But our policy, we had in before we could submit our application, we had to have a policy in place, and it had to be approved by the South Carolina Criminal Justice Academy, and ours was approved on the first time down. So we've got a good one in place, and as soon as we get the cameras, we've already put the body camera policy out, but as soon as we get the cameras, naturally we're going to go over those things again, because it's a common sense thing, and you know, when you get out of the car, especially a uniformed patrol officer, you're going to turn the body camera on. There may be a time when you have to cut it off inside of a reservoir, but again, it's going to be a common sense. We've got certain guidelines there.
Now, one of the things that I'm very curious about, because I think that it would definitely affect what you did, is when you have individuals with cell phones recording, I mean, I would think that when an officer knows he should shoot, or an officer knows the situation is out of the control and needs to react, do you do training that says, you know, you go ahead and react? Because people are trained, just like in the military, people are trained. If this happens, you do this. If this happens, you do this. Do you have policies on how to react in that situation? Do you do any training
says
that there's somebody's got a cell phone and they're standing on their yard and they're watching you?
I think every police officer knows now that you live in a glass house, and that you're being recorded. You need to take into consideration that you've been recorded on almost everything you do. But what we have now that we're training on is what we call a FATS machine, firearm training simulator. And what it is, it gives you real life scenarios. We put our last Citizens Academy class, we put them through some scenarios on the FATS machine. Every one of them either killed somebody or got killed. Thankfully, you know, it was not real life, but it puts officers in situations where it can be a shoot or don't shoot situation. You know, you never know what's going through someone's head. I hope that we train on the fine range. We put them in situations out there.
Do you think you do adequate training?
I don't know that you can ever do adequate training. If you did, you couldn't get your job done. But, we have shift meetings where training is held. I have a full-time training officer. We try to send our officers to as many schools as we can, when we can. Like I said, we just got the FATS machine in. We have domestic violence training through the Criminal Justice Academy. It has to be completed once a year. Matter of fact, we as sheriffs have to go through training every quarter. We have to have so many training hours, and one of them each year is domestic violence. So, training is something that is continuous. You don't ever quit.
And it's necessary.
And it's necessary, yes. I lay that night and I hope and pray that one of our officers never gets shot or never has to shoot anyone. I've already had a situation like that, and I thought this officer was jam up. He'd be one of the ones that was a sort of a SWAT team officer, real gung ho. Anyway, he got shot and he had to shoot someone. And you would have thought if anybody would have recovered from that, it would have been him. No, he had medically retire him due to the effect that it had on him. And, I sent him down to crisis training down in Columbia, sort of like the situation we had on the Callison Highway. I brought a whole crew up here from Columbia to not only talk to the officers and counsel them that were on the scene, but also to counsel the dispatchers who took the call. And so that went on we held that training over at Lander, and they really, the ones who went through training were really appreciative of it. But I didn't tell them, I didn't give them, I didn't say, I would like for y'all to go. I said, you are going, so. And then they asked me to leave. The gentleman in charge who in charge of this LEAP program asked me to leave. He said, because with you being there, they're not going to open up and say what right. They really want to say. So I left, and I talked with him afterwards, and he said everything was good. So, as far as I hope and pray it never happened. But I think, if I'm not mistaken, I think back years ago, back around 1970, somewhere around in there, another officer in Greenwood County was killed by gunfire down in. But he was a county officer, but he died within the city.
I would think, from the old days of policing to the today days of policing is such a difference. And, and yet we are pretty blessed to be here in Greenwood County as opposed to Chicago and some of these other places where they're dealing with, I don't know whether it's the same and just more of it or what the difference is, but I think we're pretty blessed here in Greenwood County.
We are. I think we got a great county, a great community. We got very, very good people that live in Greenwood County. Unfortunately, many times, there's one or two or a small handful that'll give a community a bad name, but everybody in that community is not a bad person. But I remember I started at the Greenwood Sheriff's Office in January 1975. I remember my first day. I put on a uniform, a hat. I had to buy my own gun. They gave me a set of handcuffs without a handcuff holder. I had them hanging out of my back, off my belt in the back. Yeah, no training. I could work for a year at that time. I could work for a year before I ever went to the police academy. But you put that uniform on back then, and people, you got respect because first of all, there wasn't as many people in Greenwood County back then. We only had two vehicles per shift that patrolled the whole county. But people pretty much respected
you. Was this Mayberry RFD?
Pretty much at that time, yeah. Pretty much. But they respected you. They knew you. They knew what your job was. And I don't know that they respected me so much as they respected uniform and the badge. I don't know what's happened in society. I would tell you this. A lot of that is gone now. You put the badge and gun on now, and a lot of areas throughout the country, there's a whole lot of anti-police sentiment.
Mm-hmm. Well, we've seen that. I mean, and the media has made that. What do you? What about Constitution carry? Do you have any problem with people having whatever weapon they can officially get?
Provided that, you know, there's a lot of talk about that now, and, you know, there's a lot of folks that don't qualify to carry a handgun. But, you know, when you get elected sheriff, you take an oath. And that oath is to uphold the laws, mm-hmm. uphold the Constitution of the state and of the United States. And I believe the Second Amendment says they have a right to carry. So, right. So let's say that a law was passed, okay? That law more than likely would be a federal law. And thankfully, we don't enforce federal law anyway. But I think that as a constitutional officer, that we're going to have to stand by the Constitution and uphold it because that's our oath. So I'm going to say I really don't have a problem with them carrying weapons, provided, you know, they have this concealed weapons permit out there. And I agree with that. I have no problem with that. The only thing I disagree with is the amount of training a person goes through before they carry that weapon. Now, what I mean by that is they can take a .22 revolver and qualify with it. I think the class has to be 8 hours. One time was 8 hours. Now they've reduced that
to 6 hours.
So now you sit in there for a couple hours and you talk about gun safety and so forth. And then you go out there and you shoot your weapon. I don't know how many times they shoot it, but let's say it's a .22 revolver. Well, now they go out and they buy a semi-automatic 9mm or a 40 caliber Glock. Mm-hmm. They don't have a clue how to use it. I think with proper training. Proper training comes education, and like I said, I wouldn't have a problem with it. I do tell people, if an officer, you know, in South Carolina, you can legally carry a weapon in your glove compartment. And if you don't have a glove compartment, you can carry it right there in your console. You cannot have it out in the open. If you got it under the seat in your car, that's illegal. But if an officer stops you for some reason, let him know up front, look, I got a concealed weapons permit, or either I don't have a concealed weapons permit and my weapon is in the glove compartment. You're more than welcome to reach in there and get whatever you need. Like I said, there's so many good people in our county that we do find a lot of weapons off of some of our younger people. Mm-hmm. And a lot of those weapons are stolen. But, you know, if you have a weapon stolen and you don't have the serial number or the model number and the serial number and the caliber and so forth, we can't put it in the computer. And so if it's recovered somewhere, I can't say that this particular 9mm Smith & Wesson and that 9mm Smith & Wesson, which look identical, which one belongs to you? We don't know. So if you got your serial numbers and so forth,
put yourself keep in better.
Yeah, keep them on file. And, you know, if your weapon is stolen, we can at least put it in the computer and we can find it. We can identify it when we find it. But one of the issues we're having, Ann, is we classify them as auto break-ins, mm-hmm. but the doors are unlocked. Just like last night, I think it was, or maybe it was the night before last, we had several vehicles going into an apartment complex. And lo and behold, there was a weapon in one of them, but the doors were not locked. I think so far this year, from out of all the vehicles we've had that we consider broken into or theft reported out of, only one has had a window broken. The rest of them, the doors have been unlocked.
Wow.
Lock your doors, please.
Yeah. Well, that's like you used to never have to lock your doors here in Greenwood County. In Greenwood, now you have to lock your doors, and you're pretty foolish if you don't lock your doors of your home or your vehicle.
Yeah. Right. You know, you get out of your vehicle and you walk in your house and you lock the doors behind you. But, you know, that's a shame. Our society has gotten to that. A person gets off of work and he goes into his house and he locks his doors and he lets his blinds down. Unfortunately, he's become a prisoner in his own home. You know,
that's true.
You know, because of some of the stuff that goes on the streets or in various communities.
Now, we have such a large county, Greenwood County.
440 something square miles, I believe.
Yes. How do you, I'll use the word police, sheriff, the whole county, as far as people on staff at any one time? And are you able to do, in the different communities, spend the time in the communities to get that relationship with the people in the communities?
We divide the county up into zones. Now, I would tell you that each shift, I've got four shifts working today, work 12-hour days. Each shift has seven people assigned to it, and we have broken them down into zones, with the captain and the lieutenant being able to roam freely. I have what I call a community action team, which is short for CAT team. We pretty much put those guys out in the well, I divided them up two and two. That way, two work during the daytime, two work during the night, during critical time. We divided those. We put those mostly in the high call volume areas to prevent or deter crime or to get there to a call quicker. But yeah, there's no doubt. Greenwood City, they're divided into zones, but their zones are small.
Right.
You know, if you look at the county line up at Washoe's, and then you look at the county line down at Edgefield, straight down 25. That is a long ways. But yes, we do divide it up into zones. And I try to preach that, you know, we have to, just because we put on a badge and a uniform and wear a gun, people don't automatically respect us. I feel that each and every day we have to earn the respect of our communities. I try to preach, when you ride through a community, stop and talk to people. Get out of the car. Introduce yourself. See what kind of issues they're having. I know you're probably not as old as me, but I know you remember back in the days when we had black and white televisions, and even after color came out, you had the police officer on the beat. Mm-hmm. He was wearing blue.
Right.
George Kennedy, I think, was one of them. I forgot what the name of the show was. Big City, he walked the beat.
Right.
He knew everybody on that beat. He knew the kids, he knew the parents, he knew the store owners and so forth. When we got in vehicles in, that went away. But we had to get in vehicles in order to respond to the calls, that the amount of calls that come in. But nowadays, officers, when they go through communities, they've got their window rolled up on a hot day with the air conditioner going, with the computer over there. They're having to watch to see what's popping up, and also the police radio, and also the probably got the AM/FM on too, listening to music somewhere. In the summertime, we got our windows rolled up and the air conditioning going. In the wintertime, we got our windows rolled up and the heater going. So we're isolating ourselves from the communities that we serve due to the fact
that. What can we do about
it? You try to preach it. You try to teach it. You try to ask them to go out and you know, when you're in the community, you see that gentleman out cutting grass. I don't want you to stop and bother him, but my goodness, you can throw your hand up at him. Or if you see somebody walking down the street, get out and introduce yourself. Like I said, give the community some reason to know us, to want to trust us, to want to help us. You know, a crook or a potential crook is not going to break the law in front of us. Maybe he's speeding, okay, so right. That's a given. Maybe he's public drunk. Maybe he don't give a turn signal. But as far as robbing a place or committing an assault or breaking in a location or selling drugs or whatever, they don't do it in front of us. They do it under cover of darkness, or they do it behind closed doors, and they do it that way because of cowards.
That's right. I think that it's an ongoing battle is what it sounds like to me.
Every day. But somebody got to fight that battle. Somebody has to take a stand, and somebody has to take a stand and lead the charge, because somebody has to fight that battle. And I think I'm man enough to fight it. I've been doing it since 1975. Have we won it? No. We've been in Afghanistan now for about 13 years. We haven't won that either. So we're going to continue to fight that battle the best that we can. And I'm going to do all I can to provide, to continue to provide the best and most efficient law enforcement possible.
Well, you are listening to Sheriff Tony Davis right here on WCRS. He is up for re-election. And now, Tony, I'm going to give you 2 minutes to tell the folks why they should vote for you, please. That's coming up on June 14th is when. That's a week. That's a week from less than a week. Next Tuesday, folks. Sheriff Tony Davis, Tell the folks why they should vote for you.
Well, Ann, right now your dog is pawing me over here.
She's a friendly Gracie. Girl. Yep.
I'm running re-election, for re-election, because I am concerned and I care. I care about our people. I care about our communities. I will tell you, I will make my one promise to you, and that is that I am anti-drugs, I'm anti-gangs, I'm anti-thugs, and I'm anti-crime. And we will continue to fight this battle the best that we possibly can. The people of Greenwood County are very fortunate in that they have a law enforcement agency that is very committed to fight this battle. And we're going to continue to fight it. And we will be available to assist you in any way that we possibly can. We will try to respond to the calls as quickly as we can. Although, like Ann was talking about a few minutes ago, it is a large county. Sometimes it takes us a while with the number of calls that our guys have to respond to. But my investigators are very committed. The detention officers are committed. The 911 does an excellent job over there. So I think we have an outstanding department. We cooperate well. And I think that's one of the keys to law enforcement is cooperation and communication. And we work well with our local police departments and the state agencies and the federal agencies. And my commitment to you is I will do the best job that I possibly can to serve as your sheriff if I'm reelected.
And that was Sheriff Tony Davis, up for reelection June 14th. Hey, Tony, thanks so much for coming out today.
Sure, and time flew.
I didn't realize
it was 5 o'clock.
It certainly is. This is WCRS right here in Greenwood. Bye-bye, everybody.